It is time for Dig Deep on KAXE KBXE, a conversation where we get to talk to liberal commentator Aaron Brown and conservative Chuck Marone. You know Chuck from Strong Towns, both his book and his organization, and Aaron Brown from the Great Northern Radio Show and Minnesota Brown. Thanks for being with us, you guys.
It's fantastic to be here. The chill is in the air, and yeah. we're getting ready for some like happy impeachment talk.
Well, that's
it's the impeachment season.
It's now time.
It's time for a deep dive into impeachment. So let's talk about some of the basics here. I think one of the big things that I am hearing, I want to talk about the history, but I think when people hear the word impeachment, they think that may mean removing a president from office, that's what that ultimately means. And as we know from history, that is not what it means. But let's start off with the Constitution, where this language came from, what it meant initially. You guys want to begin there?
I spent my time in preparation for this reading the Federalist Papers and going back in the writings of Alexander Hamilton and James Madison and John Jay.
And he's backing this up because there's a copy of it right
by
him.
Yeah. Yeah, I promise I won't read from it directly. But I think it's good for us if we're going to have a conversation about the Constitution and about what this process is going to mean, because it's been so rarely brought to fruition, not rarely used. I mean, it's been threatened a lot and there's been articles of, you know, whatever drafted and looked at many, many times. But the idea that it's only really come to this point a handful of times means we don't have a lot of experience. There's not a lot of case law in the legal sense. So what were the framers trying to do? And I think it's really important for us to understand how freaked out they were about the executive. They had just fought a war that largely, I think they would have said, was not with the English people or even really the English military, but was with the king. And they were very keen, and even despite the modern debate over Alexander Hamilton and his desire for a strong executive, the last thing they wanted was someone who was unaccountable. And you see them going to great lengths throughout, you know, and these were the vocal advocates at the time, in the Federalist Papers, going to great lengths to saying, no, we're going to be able to get rid of this person. If we don't like them, they'll be accountable. This is not like someone who's going to serve for life. This is not one who, you know, is going to be above the law. They'll be treated the same things we do. Here's the process by which we go about doing this, and here's why this makes sense. And so I think it's important for us to, in today's sense, understand that their biggest fear was a king, was someone who could act with impunity and not be held accountable. And they wanted a process that would not be, in a sense, anarchical, you know, like it would just remove people and have it be chaotic. So they wanted something where like the passions could be kind of simmered, but they wanted something where there's a very clear way for, if this person is not doing the job they were put in place to do, they need to go. Like, they need to be gone. We're not going to wait for the next election. This is what's going to happen.
And I came to the same observation reading for my research as well. And the example I would use is our founders, the founders of the country. It was a little like reading the Constitution is like reading the social media posts of a friend who just broke up with somebody. And like every post has like these veiled, like this language that's like, they're talking about that, aren't they? You know, they're really just getting a dig in, you know. So if you read through the Constitution, and that fear of the executive was the biggest thing you can pick up from it. It's clear not just in the articles of impeachment and how impeachment works. They really emphasized the legislative branch as this dominant branch in our system of government. They gave all of that oversight to the Senate. They gave all that oversight to the House. Certain things can only happen with congressional approval. And it's only the erosion of those norms over many, many years, like being boiled in a pot of water, you know, you're it's just a nice little warm pot of water at first, and then you're boiling. Well, we've now gone to a very strong executive system. I'm not blaming any one president for that. The last several have done their own things to make that so. So that was one thing I noticed. And in impeachment in particular, there's language at the pivot of it, right at the where the rubber hits the road, and the language is high crimes and misdemeanors. That's the reason you can impeach the president. High crimes and misdemeanors. And that could be almost anything.
It really, I feel like what they were trying to do was leave it very wide open.
It was deliberately vague.
The process, we do have a very different government than originally envisioned by the writers of the Constitution, the strong executive. And I think when we talk in the next segment about impeachments that have gone forth, there's a pre, and I would put the line at Wilson, pre-Woodrow Wilson kind of America, and there's a post-progressive movement America, where you had this creeping consolidation of power in the executive. When we look at that pre-Wilson time frame and up to when, you know, back to George Washington, what you had was you had the House that was supposed to represent the burning passions of the populace. The House were elected every 2 years. They were directly responsive to the people. You would have smaller districts. You'd know your district. And that was where, like, the burning cauldron of direct democracy would happen. They wanted to temper that because they saw in the past, in Greece, in Rome, when you had direct democracy, it did not work. It fell subject to these overwhelming passions of the population. People did crazy things.
Demagoguery ruled.
Exactly. And so they wanted to make sure that there was essentially like this cooling process, a simmering process. And that was the Senate. The Senate at the time was not elected by people. It was not elected by anything that we would consider today to be a democratic process. Senators were appointed by state legislatures. They, in a sense, represented the interests of the state. And so the idea of impeachment was that the House, this burning, passionate place, would say, we've had enough with this executive. They're not doing what they're supposed to do. They've committed a high crime or a misdemeanor, or as we'll see in the case of Andrew Johnson, you know, they're just offensive to us in many ways. We want them removed. And then it would go to the Senate. And the Senate was designed to...
Yeah, to serve as like a almost like a mini judicial branch. Like the senators would be the people wearing the wigs and the long robes who would, you know, let's consider not just policy, but let's consider the president's appointees for various offices. Let's be a deliberative body, almost like small versions of judges.
The Chief Justice actually comes in and is like the magistrate that deliberates it. But the Senate does convert overnight to a judicial kind of body.
Mm-hmm. Right. And now we're going to see, because we're going through this process in modern times, and those of us who remember the Clinton impeachment or the Nixon process that had just begun within our living memory, I don't think we have any Andrew Johnson era people listening right now anyway, at least not by airtime. So the Senate, you know, becomes not just a voting political body, but it actually becomes a court when this reaches that point. And if it passes the House, it goes to the Senate. And senators don't speak. They just deliberate. They listen. The case is prosecuted in front of them as though they were a 100-member jury. That's kind of remarkable and shows you where maybe they were thinking the Senate was when they founded the Constitution.
I think the other part of this that was revealing to me in going through the Federalist Papers, there was a recognition that this was both a legal process, but also a political process. While it's not stated like specifically, because you do have this, the high crimes and misdemeanors kind of notion of what this is, it's rather clear to me, or at least my impression is that it was very acceptable to remove a president for political reasons. You wouldn't think of this as like partisan politics. And I think when the framing, when the Constitution was put together, there weren't political parties the way we think of them today. There were factions and dispositions, but they were more geographic state factions than they were political party factions the way we think of them. But it was clear that the notion, if we got an executive through this process that was either not doing the job or not doing the job that the very powerful legislative branch would want them to do, that the very powerful legislative branch, if both the simmering passions of the House and the deliberative body of the Senate said, hey, this person should not be in office, then they shouldn't be in office, regardless of whether like an actual criminal crime had been committed. There was basically this consensus that if the ruling class, the representatives of the people and the representatives of the state, agree together that this person shouldn't be president, they should be gone. Mm-hmm. And that's something I think that is coming into play now. We always have this debate, what is a crime? What is a misdemeanor? My impression is that it was very clear that if they just disagreed on policy, and we're going to see this with Andrew Johnson in the next segment, we talk about this, that is a reason to remove someone at the end of the day.
Yeah, going back to that constitutional language, there's all kinds of things in the Constitution that show up that show what they were afraid of happening. And I think one of the big things they were afraid of happening was a president. Let's just step back for a moment and consider that they call our top executive in this country president, which was almost an insult at the time, almost like moderator of the United States. That's the connotation of the word at that time.
You preside over the country. And you, in a sense, not in a sense, in a literal sense, you execute and carry out the directions of the legislature. You don't make laws.
Right.
You don't come up with your own thoughts of doing things. You just preside over the country the way the legislature has established.
I know a lot of Americans look at a title like prime minister now and say, prime minister, what a stupid title for your top executive. But at the time, they were denying that very powerful title to our executive. That was not the title that executive was going to get. They're going to get a super lame title, the lamest one we can think of, which is president. And so that's built into the Constitution. And also built in is a lot of fears that this country had. And of course, historical context is really important. America, when it was founded, you know, this notion of foreign born, well, all of the people involved were either British subjects who rebelled against their crown or were immigrants of one nature or another, at least counting among the people.
Immigrants who were not given the same status at that point even as the English born. The English born ran the first iteration of the country.
English born. But like America was nothing of any note. People who were allowed to vote, people who were engaged in the process, there were no Americans. That was something they were crafting. And they were really concerned about foreign influence and the idea that a president or an executive or members of Congress could become agents of some external force. That was something very much on their mind when they wrote the naturalization requirement for the president. For instance, a president has to be born in the United States, or I believe in certain U.S. territories, or, you know, like John McCain example, because he was born on a military base outside of the United States, he was still eligible to run for president. That's another area where I think, as we're watching our current process play out, we're going to see some of those elements come back to discussion.
By the time you get to the writing of the Constitution, not only did you have the revolution in the U.S. throwing off the power of the king here, but you had hundreds of years of strife in England itself over the role of the monarchy. Kings deposed, like different forms of government declared. The king brought back, you know, a new king. They were struggling with this too. And around the same time, you had the French Revolution, where King Louis lost his head, and you had all this like chaos that ultimately resulted in Napoleon. So this is a period of time where a single leader was looked at with a huge amount of suspicion. Suspicion that we've since, in a sense, cast off.
We will, in our next segment, Chuck will read directly from the Federalist Papers.
How exciting.
What a tease is that. No, we'll be talking to Andrew Johnson more about impeachment. You're listening to Dig Deep on KEXE KBXE with Chuck Marone and Aaron Brown.